Depending on what time of day you're listening to this, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. My guest today is Jay Makarov, who is a spirited entrepreneur, former Microsoft team leader, and expert in people development. Jay is currently building his new startup called Talentway, where they have a vision that any small and medium business can become a learning organization, even with the HR department of one. And they also believe that it's the time to democratize the market and make the Googles and the Facebooks of this world afraid of young tech companies and their skills. Jay is actually my favorite type of guest, that type who does most of the talking. And not only that, he also asks himself very good questions. So I can genuinely just sit back and enjoy and relax and listen to some of the fantastic experiences and pieces of knowledge Jay wants to share. And we started talking about some of the outdated books and theories that are still at the core of some of the management and learning programs that we run in our organizations. But we then moved on to the fact that people do want to learn, they do want to evolve, and they want to realize their potential more than ever before, but they struggle. They don't know where and how to find help. We also touched upon the fact whether, you know, people do take enough ownership individually of that process of for growth and development, but also what can organizations do to help that happen. Here's my conversation with Jay Makarov. Enjoy. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. You're here, I'm here, so we might as well. And we start off with the usual. Jay, when you were little, what did you want to be, or who did you want to be when you grew up?
All right, it's a tough question for me, because like when I was a kid, I really did not know who I wanted to become. I didn't have some special dreams. I was like more a generalist, was really good at school, at university. And what I was 100% sure that I don't want to be a people manager or like any, I didn't want such responsibility. But right now I am like a people manager. So this is like a bit fine. But I love basketball. So I was, of course, dreaming to, I was raised in like in Europe, but I was thinking, okay, maybe I have a chance to get to play in NBA. So this kind of dreams.
I think most of the people that have asked this question did have. Only a handful, a very small handful did go straight away. Yeah, I knew what I wanted to be and just like went into that answer. Most people really have to dig deep and think about it. And it's interesting to know what people find, what they wanted to be when they were little, because sometimes they're really amazing, amazing stories. Some of them came to fruition one way or another. Others didn't, or others evolved. But it's funny, I love that icebreaker. I was talking to friends the other day about how, you know, when we're kids, we are limitless. We don't know what's possible. And that's a brilliant place to be, because as we grow up, that disappears. And something that we really, as adults, have to work a lot to kind of remove those boundaries that society, but also most of all, I would think, we ourselves have put upon ourselves and on our brains, say, oh, we can't do that, you know. I always like to challenge myself. I often actually challenge my dad, who's a business owner, who's got, unfortunately, a tendency, because of the kind of the generation that he's from, having been brought up and lived in Poland on his life, of, you know, giving me 10 reasons why something's not going to work. And whenever I gave him some marketing advice, and I always challenged him, okay, for every reason you gave me that it's not going to work, can you give me one that you think it might work, right? And these limiting self-beliefs that we often put out on ourselves in terms of the businesses that we do, how we develop ourselves, and also how we manage people as well, and to remove these biases. But thank you very much for sharing that story of who you wanted to be. I guess we can move on to what we really wanted to talk about, because when we first got introduced and we started talking, we connected on several things, but there's one that really stood out to me. Something that when you said that, as we were searching for a potential topic of conversation for us, you said about all sorts of outdated books and theories and kind of management frameworks that are at the core of what we do at work in our organizations in terms of management and learning programs and how we support and how we help our teams grow. And we both agreed that they simply seem, as I said, outdated, that they don't potentially work for our generation, for the next generation of people. And I know this is a huge, broad and wide question there, or topic in general, but I'm curious to know, what is that kind of one thing that you come up most often, across most often in that respect, that we use some outdated theories or frameworks or whatever programs to help grow the next generation, and that you think, actually, you know what, there's definitely a better way of doing that?
It's a very, very good question. For me, the most outdated thing I see almost every day, it's about people management. Because this is a pretty old discipline, and we have really great research and books and theories and practice and trainings around this area. But years go and go, and times are changing, but we don't see a lot of progress in the people management. For example, I really like this Gallup research and book, which was called First Break All the Rules by Jim Carter and Marcus Buckingham. It was published, I think, in 1999. And they did quite a great job, and they introduced this Q12 engagement survey, which is still really interesting, essential, I think, and challenging for organizations. And what we see that they made some kind of defined questions which tell if your work environment is good enough for people to be engaged and to perform and be their best. And we see that during the last 20 years, according to their data, the situation hasn't improved at all. Even worse, the engagement level are going a bit down, which is very, very strange, because even in this book, we have all the theory that is needed for manager to be a great manager. So why not just to take it, to apply it, and this engagement should go up very high. But we don't see that. And of course, one of the reasons is that for first-time managers in the small, medium company, especially, we don't have culture of these management basics. We don't know how to train them fast. But even a large company, so I worked at large company, I worked at Microsoft for many years, and you see that even there, of course, there are different standards of management, but still most of the principles that were declared in this book, they are not here. And this book is all about this theory was all about talent management, so that we need to focus on strengths instead of weakness, that we need to hire based on people talents, and that we could focus on performance first and help people grow. But it looks like it just doesn't work somehow. So and this is an issue, because we still use all of these theories, and we call this talent management in HR. We love these words, but do we really implement those principles? I feel that we don't. And
but do you think that we don't implement these principles, or we implement them in the wrong way, or is it something wrong with the actual principles, that maybe they worked in a different time, but when they were developed 10, 20, 30 years ago, but in this day and age, they no longer do? What's your take?
Yeah, in my opinion, these principles are still right. And this we have really great the principles discovered by different research people. And for example, I'm also a big fan of Ray Dalio's work and his book Principles, and the way how he made this, his culture and his organization. This is incredible. I have not seen that any other organization that could raise the bar of management so high, but this is probably an exception. We cannot, not many organizations can have such a culture. But if we're talking about all companies, the root reason, I think, that it's much more complicated to implement those principles than we expect. So even if you know this, it's very, very complicated. So, and it's just, maybe it's even not realistic to be such great managers it works like this. The principles are correct, and if the person apply them, he's successful manager, but it demands too much from people, and maybe we just don't have enough energy, enough competence. Looks like it's just not realistic. It just doesn't work. Some step is missing in between. So we see the point B where we want to get. We see point A where we are now, but something is missing in between. So we don't know how to make the first step, second step, third step, and nothing changes.
I'm mindful that I actually led us down this path of talking about this very broadly with the kind of the leading question here. So I'd like to focus it a little bit at the very least. And one of the things that I would say in relation to what you mentioned about that we don't know how to do it and some things don't always work, that something's kind of not right. I feel that a lot of the time we take principles, concepts, or what we've seen work in other organizations, and pretty much try and do a copy and paste job. And again, to try and give an example here, I've seen firsthand back in the day of being an employee, to be precise, a project manager in an IT organization, that I came into that organization where a few months beforehand, the Spotify squad model was introduced. And I've seen that, as I mentioned, firsthand, but I've also seen and heard about it done multiple times in other organizations. And you know what? Most of the time, what happens? It bloody fails. Or it never works the way it's intended to. And the issue with that is that we take the surface code. We don't take the actual root code of the organization, the culture, how things are done, how people think, the values, the purpose, not just of the business, but within the culture or within internally inside the organization. So we just take what we see on the surface and trying to copy that. But the underlying principles that drive it are not copied because they can't be. And that's why it fails. And I think with a lot of principles, it's exactly the same. We can extend that example to Toyota, the car manufacturer. They were, renowned for their business model a few decades ago. That what did everybody do? They did a copy and paste. But what they didn't do, again, they didn't look under the surface. They couldn't have. And that's why we, to a certain extent, have the supply chain problems that we are now, which were only, I would say, exacerbated and highlighted by the COVID situation, which obviously created a knock-on effect as a result of that. But I think they just highlighted the problem that was already there. They didn't create in the first place. But there's a bunch of research that does suggest that because organizations did the copy and paste of Toyota and the supply chain, that was part of the issue. Now, I don't think I'm an expert enough to kind of unpick all of that. Definitely I don't have enough knowledge of the internal workings of the supply chain companies and so on and so forth, and companies in general, to be able to dissect that. But I think there's definitely some merit to it. So the question that remains here is, and circling back to what you said, that there are steps missing in between. Now, we've got the principles, we want to implement something. I've mentioned partially what I think is the problem, but what do you think are the steps in the middle that you think should be there but are not, in your opinion?
Let me also please agree with what you just said. I feel the same. So when we try to copy behaviors, it could work, but only for a short period of time, and then it suddenly doesn't work. It stops working. And to be see it also, I see so many engineering teams applying Agile, Scrum, and other approach, and I never seen the more or less okay implementation of Agile. It's always like people try, everything makes it different, but everyone complains in the end that it doesn't work in the way that they expect it. And people try to skip some specific events sometime, and then they lose the idea behind it, like you mentioned, the paradigm, the principles, and it becomes more like just some kind of traditions, more behavior. And it doesn't bring this result that we're like under all of this methodology. So this is very, very interesting question. I think it's many people try to find an answer. What's how to make it work? From my experience, like what we can work usually on two things, like why people are not doing something. There is a theory about it. Usually there are a few reasons. It's one of the reasons is motivation. So people just don't understand why. And they need to do it, or they don't feel like it's needed right now. And the second reason is how easy first step, this action is. So if it's not easy for you, you will not make it. Your mind will just not give you energy. So it's not a very conscious process why we don't do something. So it's almost automatic. And this easy thing is pretty, it has many dimensions inside. So sometimes we don't do because it takes a lot of time. Sometimes it requires some physical effort. But in many situations, it requires like emotional effort, like emotional energy, because there is some social thing inside. And if we come back to managers and to these principles, you need to like get out of your comfort zone to apply these principles really well. These conversations, for example, that you need to have with your employees, really a good one-on-one conversations about career, goals, talents, they take a lot of energy to make them right. And it looks like we resist this and we try to avoid these conversations. We don't like these conversations, and it's not easy for manager. It's not easy for employee. And this could be also one of the reasons. So we know the things that are right, needed, but we don't do them because we don't, it requires too much energy. So the question is, for me, I think the biggest, the best question here is, okay, how can we make it easier? How can we simplify it for people? So who can, maybe we can delegate part of this dirty job or high energy job to someone or some AI or something that could help us and guide us. Because when the action is simple, we always do it. Even if it makes no sense, it's all these social networks and notifications. We hate them, but we are like robots. Sometimes we just click and click because it's so easy. It's already a habit. You just do it. So if the question is, yes, how to make these really new habits of a great manager and who will help me with these first steps? This is the question.
Great question. Great question. Do you have an answer? Do you have any suggestions of how we can do that? How managers can do that?
Yeah, I think we already see some progress in this field. So we, first of all, if we take a look at our industry, we see that the more and more coaching and mentorship start to appear, and this, it really helps. So if a person can have a third party, like coach or mentor, external or internal, which could help him just from outside, it always helps. Because when we commit to something, to another person, when we get advice from the person, respect or trust, it's our progress is much faster. So this is one of the options. So we just need to help people find the mentors and the coaches that are really good for them. But we have a lot of issues here, of course. So one of them is how to democratize it, because we can see it more often for middle management, for senior management, for people who have money, for whom it's not a problem to pay, like, I don't know, $200-$300 per month for this. But for individual contributors, it's still like not always right now easy to find a person. And so this is option number one. We have other options. So I really also believe in different types of assessments. So we are very different. We are very unique. And I spent like almost 10 years doing different types of assessments with my company. And there are really, really great tests, personality tests, that can show some kind of your superpowers and your strengths. And when you use them, everything becomes immediately very, very natural and easy, and it's much faster to get progress there. When you understand your superpowers, your talents, and how to apply them in your daily work, it really, really helps. For example, for managers, it's like we're all different and we have different styles of management. So it's really good if you understand as a manager, what's your personal natural style should be of the management, what you should do and what you should avoid, and what type of help you need as well. So, and we have a lot of studies that show that one person, it's very complicated for one person to be a really, really great manager in all aspects. And this is why sometimes it's better to have a team of managers with different strengths who like have synergy between each other. And each one applies their talents, and they together are doing the great job, because each one of us have a lot of blind spots, and it's much better to understand it, to realize it, and to avoid it. I really believe in this type of assessments. With my personal work, this is my intention to help people use it in their daily work to make it really easier. Because the problem with the assessments is that probably you have already made a few, all of us, that in the end, usually you get this PDF with like, I don't know, 10 pages of text or 50 pages of text. And this is so overwhelming. You read it, you think, oh, it's so smart, so profound. I can recognize myself. But what to do with all of these 50 pages of PDF? Sometimes we just don't read because, again, it's too much time, too much effort. Yeah. For example, recently I passed myself, like I think 1 year ago, this Clifton Strengths Assessment. So really, really great. I loved it. But I still cannot read fully this PDF because it's such a long read that I don't know how to apply it. So I think this is where technology could already help us, because if I run a few assessments, if I know my type of job, I'm an engineer, or I don't know, like I'm a people manager, I'm like a marketing product manager, I could already get a few advice. What exactly I could try, which type of projects, what I should discuss with my team, with my manager. So this is, I think, the technology should solve already right now. We are missing it. We are missing it now, but we need it.
So you think that AI is there already to be able to do that, or is that something that needs to be developed still?
I think we can. Yes, it's already there. I mean, we need to develop it, but we have all the technologies that are needed. But by the way, here and maybe even on the first step, even AI is not needed, because just experts in these assessments who just spent some time, not much time with the results, can already give really great recommendations for people. And sometimes it's really funny that I often use this type of assessment during talent interviews when I hire people. Sometimes after a few tests, like, you know some things about the person who you see first time in your life much better than he does. And this is very funny. So like sometimes people, for example, there is a very nice test which is called multiple intelligence test, which the idea behind is that there are different types of intelligence and we are all great at some specific intelligence types. It can be musical intelligence or like linguistic intelligence or like something about nature or about your body or about like interpersonal or talking to other people. So, and when I see the results and when I see the top score, the highest, like people just do the simple survey for 5 minutes. And when I see the results and I see the intelligence with the highest score, it's very often when I see that people don't implement it in any way in their job, not at all. And sometimes they just select their own career because all their like mind is wired to do different type of job. And they're doing something else. But when you ask them how they always try to apply it in their hobby or somewhere, because when you have something, it cannot just sit inside. It demands like for you to do something because you get so much pleasure when you do it. People with, for example, musical intelligence, high musical intelligence, they cannot skip it. They must apply it. So of course we cannot apply it in our business. Maybe it's more for a hobby for many people, but still, and people don't realize it. So it's when you explain to them, it starts to make a lot of sense and they start to think differently. And yeah, so, and for example, I studied computer science and engineering, and many people right now, especially, they try to get this profession of software developer because they know that the salaries are really good and you can be successful in this market. But from what I saw when I studied, there was no such salaries, and people came who just really wanted to be engineers without like high salary expectations. But even from those group, even half of the people, only half of the people, I would say, could really be successful software engineers. For other people, it was always like a torture. Your just mind doesn't accept it. It's you don't like this type of job. You can learn all the skills, but after a few years of work, you don't like it. You want to change it. So you cannot work 10, 20 years in this profession. And this is where I feel we waste sometimes too much time. People waste too much time. It's a really good trend right now that we are ready to be more flexible, to change our jobs more often. And if we get a few like ideas and help, which opportunity is better for me to try, where I have more chances to be successful, where my learning path will be much more enjoyable and fast, this type of advice I feel could really help to realize potential people much faster and give them more well-being and feel of success and progress.
So many things in what you said. I wanted to pull on, because it's so many possible side conversations and way we could take our chat here. But I'll pull up the last thing that you've mentioned, that is what's often used as a big issue, especially when we talk about millennials and generations beyond millennials. The thing that you've said, I agree. we need to try different things to know whether they are for us, whether we're going to be good at them, whether we're going to enjoy them, whether we can really do it justice, right? But often, and this is something that comes up, and I'm sure you many people will agree that they've experienced this, is that we potentially give up too soon, that we don't persist enough until we actually can make a full system, that we just kind of go, oh, it's uncomfortable, right? It's about going outside your comfort zone. It's about trying new different things, right? Stretching that zone. I would argue we often give up even beyond, way before it starts to hurt. It just gets a little uncomfortable. It's, you know what? It's not for me. I'll jump into it. And we use what you've mentioned as, which is a valid reason that we might not be doing the right thing. We should be changing. We should be trying. Yes, but we use that as an excuse, which we don't yet, in my opinion, often have the right to use that, because we haven't gone far enough. We haven't given enough time. We haven't persisted. And I'm curious to, in a way, playfully challenge what you said, that I think that people are trying things but giving way up too quickly. What do you think about that? Is that, do you feel that's the case, or am I being unfair and very cynical?
No, I feel it's very often the case, and especially for some people, it's easier to be persistent and just a built-in feature, but for some people it's not easy. And we must help these people. And one of the ways is just to help them to show the progress much more often. So like it's one of the principles in the gamification techniques and loops, because really sometimes, again, our mind doesn't give us this energy to continue something. But if you make this, if you split these long-term activities into smaller ones, it suddenly the same type of activities you start to enjoy, and you feel progress and you want to continue. I think all this trend of this micro learning, it's also about that. So how to help people, how to help people feel progress and continue.
And again, at the risk of, well, actually not at the risk, I'll be blatant about it, playing devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. Do you think individuals actually take enough ownership of their development?
This is for sure. I think it's a very, very tough question, fair question. From what I see, many companies, this is what HR team and management, we would like to have. So we want people to take ownership of their development, because right now we sometimes provide a lot of opportunities for our employees to grow, and we want to invest money in that. We give some benefits of learning and development, and we are ready also for some custom requests. If my employee comes to me and says like, Jay, I want to go to this conference, or I want to have a mentor, in most of the situations I will agree, and I will agree money. So it's not an issue, but people somehow still, many people don't take ownership, and they sometimes play this like a victim in this role, and they complain that their current position is don't bring them enough fulfillment, and they're not so happy about it, but they don't do anything. So this is for sure. And there is no probably other way to solve this problem, because you cannot, if the person doesn't take ownership, you cannot just really help them. If you as a manager, for example, you see that one of your employee lacks some skill or behavior, even with the best intentions, if person doesn't want to learn it, it's just not possible. You cannot just put the skill and put it to the mind at first. So it is probably the only way how we could create these learning organizations, or just to build skills in my team, in your team. We need somehow to make people take this ownership that you mentioned. This is step number one. Without it, like this proactive approach, that it doesn't work. So I agree, this is one of the first steps. But for people to take ownership, what should we do so people can take ownership? This is also a good question. I'm working on it as well. So this is very interesting.
And how far did you get with trying to figure that out?
Yeah, we see so many great examples where people take ownership, and we see many situations where people don't take ownership. So if we research all of them, we can see some patterns. So, for example, I also like this. I really like this. It's not a test, like it's an exercise from Ray Dalio principles. He introduces like 13 motivators, And he asked just the question, okay, which are like three things from all of these, let's assume that there are no others, and they're mixed, like your personal life and work life, it's motivators like achieve, attaining financial success, achieve career goals, like to live a life full of fun and adventure, to have a friend, family, to be liked, love, and so on, 13. And if you ask a person, choose top three that for you are really right now at this stage, very the most important that make you wake, that you wake up in the morning because you feel you need it. We can see that, for example, this motivator to learn a role is already in top three for many, many people. For many, it's like a lot of people already have it. And there is no some specific reason behind it. I don't know why people want it, but many people like it. And it doesn't even need to achieve some specific goal. People just enjoy the process of this learning and evolving and the personal development. And for this category of people, we just need to help them. They usually take ownership of their development. And for them, we just need to help them just get there faster to maybe to save their time, to give some learning that they really need for this moment. But for many people, it's not there, but they have other motivators. For example, to create something new. It's a very, very typical motivation for many software engineers. And so for them, it's important to every time to create something really, really incredible and new, some interesting new projects, new technologies, new products. And they are ready to learn in order to like get this end result. So for these people, you must connect. If you want them to take ownership of their development, they must feel that they will have some interesting project and they will create this project something new. And to proceed, they need to learn really new, I don't know, programming language or like machine learning. And it's enough for them and they proceed. And so, and this is one of the ways how to make people take ownership. We need to connect it with their very deep personal motivators. And it should not be just a formal thing, because sometimes especially in large companies, we have this personal development plan where we have this text area for employee. You need to fill it once per year. Usually you put like your development plans for the next year. And then in the end of the year, you need to like put a report. What have you done? It's very complicated in this situation to connect it with your values, to explain it to your manager HR, because you feel also that it can be used against you. It's the part of performance review together with your performance metrics, with development goals, achievement will be considered. So you try to put things that HR wants to see, which is very far from taking ownership of my development. So usually this type in this, what from what I see in large companies, it works in parallel. So in parallel, people do some things that HR wants from them, some trainings, compliance, and some of these formal things sometimes, yeah. And they really learn and develop somewhere in the shadow, and no one even when sometimes manager company doesn't see the process. So this is also not right.
The performance, also development plans, performance plans. I don't know the statistics. I would be curious to learn the data. If anyone knows it, please reach out and let me know. I'm actually curious how many of people or of the people who are being put on performance plans actually succeed. Because my, again, maybe somewhat cynical theory, and I am genuine today feeling a little bit cynical, so maybe that's where it's coming from, is that as soon as a person is being put on a performance plan, I don't want to say they're doomed to fail, but the chances of them actually succeeding despite their best intentions it might be very low. Because there is a reason potentially why their performance might be a little bit low. So they're on an emotional psychological level that might be limiting their capacity to perform better, to motivate themselves. They might be feeling stressed, anxious, or have whatever problems at work or at home that are affecting that. And therefore finding motivation to hit some of what, and this is brings me on to the second part of this challenge, reaching some of the targets that are being set by HR, which are very often very devote of the human aspect of human resources. Basically what I mean by that, they tend to be bullet points rather than, you know, something solid. Maybe I'm being very unfair here, but I probably am, and I appreciate that. But I feel that a lot of the performance plans, they tend to be a signal to an individual, okay, maybe you should leave out of your on your own accord,
It would be better if you reach an agreement. We kind of sort of want to help you, but we also kind of want to transition you out, but we didn't have to go through the steps of the legal process and so on and so forth. Again, I appreciate I'm very cynical here, and there are performance plans surely that have very good intentions and they genuinely want to help people. I believe there's more and more of those. It's very often, I think, that they just the way it's done, it's too mechanical. It's way too corporate. It's way too legal, yeah. I think. And that's why people, even if the organization genuinely wants the individual to succeed and they want to support them, to coach them, provide them all of that, the way it's conducted, the way it's always been conducted in most organizations for decades past, I think it's just not conducive to that. So you mentioning kind of the performance plans again, I remember my own, which I always found challenging, but I knew what they're for, so I was engaging in them. But then I looked at my colleagues who went, oh my god, this again, the personal development is okay. As you said, I'll put what they want me to put and not what I want to be and how I want to learn, because at the risk of it potentially being used against me. Or I don't want to set the bar too high for me because I might not hit that target, and therefore, again, it will be used against me. So I'm not saying there's malice here on anyone's behalf, the individuals or the organizations. I'm just saying that there is plenty that could be changed and improved in how we do these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. We see so many young companies, startups, which I just more and more talk to startups, that they try to resist this culture of large organizations and they try to make it less formal. Everyone needs performance, and in smaller companies, they make even much more focus on performance always, because this is your survival. But people try to make this culture where people are engaged, believe in the purpose, and trying to avoid these formal plans and try to make it like iterations, try to make it shorter, because in our current world, like 1 year, everyone says about this, it's already too much. You just cannot predict your goals for the whole year. You need to be more flexible. 1 month or like one quarter is much better.
No, absolutely, absolutely. We space them too far apart. Once a year is nowhere near enough. Some organizations do it once every 6 months or once a quarter. Okay, I think once a quarter might be a nice balance, because I think doing it too often devalues that a little bit and creates additional work, and we then need to be a little bit more mindful. So there are definitely ways and means, whether it's KPIs or OKRs or whatever you want to use structure-wise, as long as it works for you, stick with that. I don't think there's one, I wouldn't say that one's better than the other. It's always circumstantial based on your situation. So I would definitely encourage everyone to look into that. But the goals thing, the interesting thing that you said about startups, that's something that it's a focus for me in terms of the clients that I work with, helping them through the stages of growth, right? Because it's nice and relatively easy, and I use that very joyfully, when you've got 15, 20 people on board. But then when you start to grow and scale, and you're going up to 50, 100, 200, it starts falling apart at this, simply because certain things don't scale. The culture can scale, but has to be very carefully managed and maintained, and the expectations, most of all of that. It's, you know, when you've got 15, 20 people, it's a flat structure. You know everybody, you can shout to the CEO who's sitting three desks away, whilst if all of a sudden you've got 100 people and three layers of management and structure added to that, that no longer happens, right? So the people who were there from the very beginning become disillusioned, right? That there's that culture gap that happens. Mm. There's a culture, there's all sorts of chasms that we know of. Cultural chasm is also a thing in this particular case. And I think in terms of development plans and people's growth, not just culture and organization, it's very similar, because we don't have it formalized. And don't get me wrong, I do have a bit of an allergy to all sorts of policies and plans and processes, especially when they are introduced for legal reasons, just to kind of cover somebody's behind. And secondly, when they are introduced to excuse people's use of logic in whatever way to protect people from thinking, basically. Now, I'm much more in favor of not necessarily casual things, casual conversations, but something that is, you know, agreed between two adults who are autonomous and assertive and respectful of one another, and most of all, keep to their word to what they've agreed, right? And it's still within small startups, I guess some of the performance plans, the development plans can be very loosely done, but as soon as the organization starts to grow, the structural thing come in, right? And it becomes a process. And then people kind of go, but it used to be so much easier, right? It was a lot more personal, a lot more in accordance with my values, your values, the company's values. And it was more aligned. Once they grow, that's kind of get lost. The balance, although there might be an intention to try and keep that, unfortunately sways the other way.
Yeah, and this is where like HR competence could help, because it's one of the jobs of HR department to help with the culture. Of course, this is always comes from founders, from executives, not only from HR, but I think it's possible right now if you, like you mentioned, if you really carefully, when you grow, you should not forget about this, about your culture, about your values, and about the behaviors you want to see in your company. And when you feel that there is some kind of skills gap, it's important to make it a part of your HR strategy and try to fix it as soon as possible, because it's really possible to do it on the early stage. And it's very, very complicated to make it later because it becomes a new culture, some behavior that you don't want. It can quickly become a new culture and it's already too late. And this is also where HR department, HR role would be strategic for company success, for company growth.
Very true. But then a lot of startups don't get a full-on HR function until much further down the line, don't they? It's seen, I guess, actually, that's a curious question, because obviously you do work with startups. You are a startup. At which stage HR becomes a must-have instead of a good-to-have?
I see. It depends on the case, and there are completely opposite situations. For example, for a company of 100 people, 150 people, you can easily find companies which already have 5 HR people in the department and 1 a really great HR, head of HR, and those head of people and some people responsible for a learning and development function. But in other companies of the same size, you will see almost no HR, maybe one person responsible for recruitment, and he's not thinking about HR strategy or something like that. I saw like HR departments in small companies, and 30 people already have a few HR guys, and they pay a lot of attention to people's development and so on. But for other companies, even on a larger scale, like 200, 300 people, and it's try to keep it only for operations, for some general functions and so on. So it's probably depends on the executives and founders and their background and their how they think this role could help their business to grow. But of course, after some size, some factors, object like appears that you cannot avoid already. You get investors, you get some kind of problems with scale, and sooner or later you start to create this HR function. And starting from 300 people, I think, and more, it becomes more and more standardized already. And when you're talking about enterprise companies, they already very, very, they know how to make this department good. And this is one of the challenge I think we could solve together somehow. How can we help these small, medium companies to bring this competence, HR competence to them, because many of them, they want, but they don't know how. And should they like hire like more people to their HR department? It could be expensive. So like, should they try to outsource to find some consultants and to help to automate it? Because also large companies, they have, for them, it's easier to bring a lot of tools, which automate a lot of stuff. But for small companies, you don't want to waste money, and you want to see like return on investment, like how it will help me to grow. And this is where I think we could help, because still HR tech for small, medium companies, this is, it exists, but only we don't see many innovations there. So this is usually like operations, like systems, like payroll, simple platforms, like and basic functions, but most of the progress we see on the market in the industry, it's all about enterprise. And we have this gap in large companies and small companies. And this is, it's of course a competitive advantage also for large companies, because they want, they know, they work with employees in many aspects much better, way better. And people prefer to leave when they see opportunity to work at, for example, in Google or Facebook. Why should I stay like in my small startup? Like, but yeah, but I think we can help small, medium companies because they have a lot of their own advantages, like you mentioned. So it's, you don't have this bureaucracy. You can access your founders. This is very important. And you can create some really great products and projects and change the world. And you feel yourself essential part of this company. You don't always feel like that in the large organization with thousands and thousands of people. So small companies have a lot of advantages. Sometimes they're very flexible and they create innovations faster if we help them a little bit with HR function, with learning and development and retention and engagement, all these like HR performance things. I think we could see a lot of potential realized by small medium business and a lot of we have a lot of potential to grow economy as well.
Thank you very much for that, because you actually brought me on to my usual wrap-up question in these chats, and which is what you've got going on in the next, at the moment, what you're really excited about in the next few months. And I know that you do have a lot going on, and it's all to do with what you just mentioned and how to focus on those small and medium businesses to help them with the issues that you've mentioned. So I would really love to for you to share a little bit what you're working on, what you're trying to do with Talent Way, and mm-hmm. what basically makes you jump out of bed in the morning with excitement that you can work on that again.
Thank you for this question. First of all, we're really thinking how we can help people, and like especially our managers, to find, to be their best at work. And we could share, if you're interested, please, you can find me anywhere on LinkedIn or like ask for my email, and please write me, and we can share some assessments, like I mentioned, some ideas, some help. We're trying to get all these resources and for each person to help take exactly what you need right now at your work to be more successful, to feel more pleasure from your work, to upskill your employees faster, to build new skills in your team faster, to understand in which situations you need to build competence internally inside the team, but in which situations it doesn't make sense, and it's better to bring external, just to hire some people, or maybe to automate some things. So this is a tough question managers need to ask themselves, and we want to help them to answer. So we're just trying to get all that already exists and create by great partners. And on the market, there are so many great companies which already work with managers. There are so many great books, so many great mentors. So one of my task is to get all of these people together, because we have the same passion. We all want to help people to grow, learn, evolve, be successful, to realize their potential, and trying to give you exactly this moment what you need. So please, if you like this idea, come to me and I can share just some ideas, and we can maybe even form some kind of a community or help each other, like peer-to-peer group, stuff like this. So this is completely like not commercial thing. And what we do with organizations, this is already, we see that many small medium companies, they would like to become these learning organizations, but they would like that, they want some kind of self-driving mode where you as HR, you don't have a lot of time. You want people really, like you told, people take ownership of their development. We are ready as a company to invest some budget, some money, because we see that if we improve these behaviors, these skills across our organization, we'll have some benefits. And also our managers know what specific skills to build inside different teams, how we can automate it. So this is what I'm working on, to try to bring again all these great providers to company, to make them this learning organization, or even with a HR department of one person. So you don't need to hire a lot of people. And here, if you're also interested in this topic, please join. We are on a very early stage. We're just starting this initiative, and we are just trying to get these early adopters, people who feel that it will help their business grow. And if you're one of those, just please join me, and we can do some great things together. And hopefully, maybe next time when we with you, like together on podcast or somewhere else, we will already see some progress, and we could teach the other companies how to get there, because I really feel we already have enough technology and enough content and great people and trainings and providers to get there. We just need to make this first step, second step, first step. So I'm just trying to help companies make this first step, second step. to become these learning organizations, even with no HR budgets, with small HR budgets. So yeah, this is my current thought.
I definitely encourage everybody to check out Talentway, because some of the things that Jay is up to with his team are really looking exciting. So I'll definitely be including your contact details and LinkedIn in the show notes, so everybody can check that out. And I do encourage you to reach out and learn more, ask questions and get involved. Jay, thank you very much for taking the time. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for being a fabulous guest. One of my favorite types of guests who does most of the talking. So I could actually, for most of the episode, I was sitting back. Obviously, we can see one another. The listeners couldn't see, but I wasn't exactly reclining, but I was away, kind of leaning back in the chair that I was on the bench I was sitting, and just enjoying to hear what Jay has to say. So again, thank you very much for taking the time and being here with us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me, and I hope with some insights that people could be useful for you.
It's me again. Just one more thing before you take off. Head over to human.pm/we-got-this. That's all one word, where you can find this and previous episodes' show notes, suggest a guest or topic, ask a question, or join a community of other listeners. Until next time.